you for being here on a Friday afternoon to talk about Senate Bill 1511. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1511, and we're going to start with an overview from our legislative drafter. But first, I wanted to frame up what we're hoping to get done today. Since we have quite a number of people signed up, we're going to ask everyone to keep their testimony to 3 minutes or fewer. We are going to start with a description of what's changed in the 1511-16 amendment since we last spoke. And then our legislative drafter is also going to describe a bill that we've been referring to that now has a legislative concept and is soon going to be formally known as, known as Senate Bill 1598, and that addresses the efforts that we are making to help small growers with 5,000 square feet of canopy or less have the opportunity to come into the OLCC regulated system, even if they cannot produce a land use compatibility statement. And that's the third bill, and we may end up appending some additional amendments to that next week, but because so many people are interested in how we're dealing with this micro canopy issue, we wanted to. It's posted on OLIS. The legislative concept draft is under meeting materials, and Mr. Mayor is going to actually describe it before people offer testimony, so you know what is currently planned as the base for the third bill. So with that, Mr. Mayor, if you could go ahead and describe briefly the differences between the -13s and the -16s, so people have that as baseline, and quickly summarize what will be Senate Bill 1598, that would be great, and then we'll move into testimony right away.
Chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I'm here to testify briefly on the differences between the -13 amendments to Senate Bill 1511 and the -16 amendments, and then to briefly discuss Senate Bill 1598. The differences between the -13 amendments and the -16 amendments are only twofold, and there are no major substantive additions to the -16 amendments. So everything we discussed on Tuesday of this week still holds true for the most part. If you turn to page 21 of the amendment, which is section 15, page 21, we originally had as part of a conforming amendment that the Oregon Health Authority in establishing concentration levels for tetrahydrocannabinol had to establish different levels for patient cardholders and other consumers. And we just included some language here that requires OHA to consider when prescribing the concentration of tetrahydrocannabinol for patient cardholders for edibles and other types of products, to make sure that they consider what is appropriate for the debilitating condition for which the product is intended. So a little bit of direction for rulemaking there, but not putting into statute any specific dosage requirement or serving size requirement. So we did make that change. And then if you flip into, I believe it's page 29. It's pages 28 and 29. The next major change is in section 22 of the amendment. And primarily what we did here is we kind of rewrote how the stay on plant limit caps for those medical grow sites that are moving into the OLCC market. We kind of rewrote some of that to make it a little bit easier and more likely that industry would be able to meet the standards. The primary difference is that underneath the older provision, these grow sites had to collect the signatures of all the patient cardholders for whom they were producing marijuana, attesting to the fact that those cardholders were aware that they were moving into the OLCC license system and that their product ownership of the product would transfer. What we've done now is we have required the grow sites to instead submit proof to OHA that they have sent by certified registered mail notice to each cardholder that this was happening, so that their license will not be contingent on the cardholder actually signing the piece of paper or being gotten a hold of in enough time. And then we also included language that basically said, and this is a constitutional principle, so whether we have it in the bill or not, it's not going to matter. It is the law that patient cardholders do have to be justly compensated for anything that is transferred from their ownership, their possession over to the grow site's possession once they enter into licensure. And that could be that the patient cardholder shows up and they get their product and whatever else belongs to them. It could also be that they show up and they are provided a fair market value for whatever type of product is transferred into the grow site's ownership. So we did cover that as well. And that's the major change in the stay on plant caps. Are there any questions about the dash 16s then?
Yes. I actually have a question on both of the sections. On the cardholder process that you outlined, if the cardholder never shows up, in other words, they get noticed and they don't show up to either collect their product or collect compensation, what does that slow anything down, or is there some kind of a time limit?
The way that it's drafted is that notice has to be sent. There has to be sent notice to the patient cardholder by certified registered mail with return receipt requested, but nothing is contingent on information flowing back or the patient cardholder showing up to claim their possessory right to their usable marijuana. It is written that if they do show up and they do request just compensation or the product itself, that it has to be provided. But otherwise, the onus is going to be somewhat on the patient cardholder to make sure that if they want to claim their right, that they, when they get the notice, to come in and claim it.
And follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes,
would they have a deadline beyond which they wouldn't have any standing anymore?
Not the way it's written, but I think because it's a constitutional principle that we're just basically codifying here, that any kind of deadline would be marginally legal at best. We might be able to handle that in the third bill with a little bit more research on my part as to if there is appropriate deadline for the takings clause.
Madam Chair, if I could do one more follow-up. When they show up, they can only be given the amount they're legally entitled to possess. Is that correct?
Correct.
So if they ask for compensation, would that same provision apply? That they could only be compensated for the amount they were legally entitled to possess?
Chair Burdick, because underneath current Oregon law, all seeds, plants, and usable marijuana belong to the patient cardholder statutorily, and it is their possess. They have a possessory right to it. In order to meet the constitutional requirement for just compensation upon a taking, they have to be justly compensated for everything that is their right to possess, which would be basically what the grow site has. And that would apply whether or not we wrote it into the bill or not. It's a constitutional principle. So
just one more, if I could. So theoretically, they could demand the full amount of cannabis they're legally entitled to possess, plus compensation for the rest.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could ask a question on the other section or just make a comment.
Yes, please.
There's been a lot of concern about some of the dosage limits that OHA is setting, and I've been telling people that it really isn't the ideal to put dosage limits in statute. It's that really is a regulatory function. So I just want people to know that I will be available to work with people to engage in conversations with OHA to make sure that they are on target with some of their dosage limits. I think we can accomplish that through the regulatory process.
That's great. Any other comments? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll have one comment, and then you're welcome to go back to your other duties. But the dosage, the direction, that gentle direction to OHA that's in the statute in the dash 16 is to take into consideration the uses for which the medical cannabis is used to treat debilitating conditions. That's intended to be a signal that we need to honor and respect that some very potent kinds of medicines need to be allowed, you know, with the intensities and potencies that customers and patients are used to in order to treat their conditions. So we are trying to expressly respond to concerns that we heard raised in the patient community, and I hope you feel like that does it without us putting into law specific numbers, which has a lot of difficulty because it's hard to change specific numbers like that once they're in statute, and you need to be able to evolve as the understanding of medical cannabis evolves. Okay, great. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Beyer, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to follow up on the comment you're doing there, and just one of the issues that has been brought up to me is that there's a concern that OHA is perhaps stepping too far and limiting the amount of medicine that people might get. And I think our concern when we were trying to do the thing is to make sure that by limiting dosage that people knew what they were buying. There was never an intent to allow OHA to limit what they could get necessary to do that. And I hope the agency keeps that in mind. We're not trying to restrict that. People know what kind of or what level of medicine they've been buying and shouldn't be restricted from that.
Thank
that
you.
Was not the intent of the ballot measure or the statute that we passed.
Right. I think you're right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We appreciate it. Yes, you are going to talk about the next bill. Please go ahead.
Unless you would like to release me, I'd be happy to go. The new bill, Senate Bill 1598, which is not posted on OLIS and not available to the public yet, but has been, it's halfway through the publication process in our office.
Chair,
I'm going to just jump. Yeah, please go ahead.
It is actually in OLIS as a meeting material in LC form.
Oh,
so
okay.
The formal bill that will be introduced on Monday is not on OLIS as a bill, but it's in today's meeting materials as an LC, and it is not changed. It will be introduced in that form.
So please go ahead.
And I believe the LC number on that is LC 314. Is that correct? Yeah. Basically, the base bill for the third bill that this committee is going to consider, the Marijuana Christmas Tree Bill, the base statute basically does, I think, a couple of important things. Not really my place to say whether they're important or not, just to say what they are. First thing that it does is that it creates a exemption from having to obtain a land use compatibility statement for certain types of medical marijuana grow sites that are deciding to acquire a license from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and move into that process. Currently, the criteria for doing that, and I know that there's already some interest on refining this criteria. First, you have to be applying for the license at the same address at where the marijuana grow site is located. Secondly, outside of city limits, so only within the jurisdiction of counties. Thirdly, every person who is growing at the site has to have been first registered to grow at the site prior to January 1, 2015, which is the same date as to which the grandfathering in of the larger plant caps is. And then finally, the canopy size has to be for 5,000 square feet or less if it's produced outside, or 1,250 square feet or less if it's produced indoors. And so that's the first part of this bill. I think the second part of this bill is really about clarifying some of the interaction between what local governments can do under the statutes that allow them to adopt reasonable regulations and other statutes that relate to classifying marijuana and production of marijuana as a farm practice or farm use. And here I would just draw people's attention to Section 4 and Section 5. The most important things to look at in both of those sections is subsection 2, and I, you know, it's going to be hard because I'm looking at the bill instead of the LC, I apologize, but section 4, subsection 2, and section 5, subsection 2, there are now two additional carve-outs that allow, that specifically allow cities and counties to adopt more clearly regulations related to nuisance underneath 3935, and regulations relating to farm structures and farm practices under 215.253. So waiving the lux and then clarifying the interrelationship between land use, marijuana being produced as a farm product and city and county's ability to reasonably regulate. And those are the two major changes in this bill.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any questions about that? And we will be having a public hearing on that bill on next Tuesday, but we wanted to just introduce the elements of it because we know that the issues are on a lot of people's minds. Okay. Thank you. With that, I really do mean you're free to go take care of other things. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to begin our panels. Again, we'd love to have people testify for no more than 3 minutes each, please, so that we can try to get to everyone. For the first, I'll call a panel with an on-deck panel so folks in an overflow room can know that they're coming over. And we'll try very hard to get everyone who's traveled more than 100 miles in for sure. I'm hopeful we can make that happen. And there are a lot of other people, too. So the first panel will be Paul Lewis, it's some local government folks, who is the Tri-County Health Officer for Multnomah County, Rob Bovet, who represents counties, and Scott Winkles, who represents cities. If you could come up, and we'll start with Paul, who's on speakerphone. And then on deck, we will have Nikki Terzieff, Don Morse, and Tess Milo. If both Nikki and Don are going to be here, you're both testifying or just one of you? Both. Okay. So that's the on-deck panel, please.
Hi, this is Paul. Give me a message. I'll call you back.
Oh. Do you want me to start, Madam Chair?
Please go ahead. If he's unavailable, please go ahead. Thanks.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. Mark's very busy, of course. He missed a couple of things in LC 314 that are really important for you to know that are also there, and I think everyone in the audience. One of the other things done in LC 314 is it adds medical marijuana as a farm use. Another thing it actually does that's not even related to that, but it's another one of the ornaments, shall we say, for the Christmas tree is I made a mistake in working with Mark on the crafting of the last bill, and I forgot to include a provision that allows people to expunge old convictions based on the new categories. I added that to Senate Bill 40 two sessions ago and House Bill 3400. I just forgot, and Attorney Lee Berger pointed that out to me, so that's in there too. With regard to the bill before you today, AOC supports the latest iteration of the bill, which is the -16s. And it's a good bill, should pass. Happy to answer any questions you might have about that. Not supportive of any of the other amendments, primarily because we think it will weight it down and cause the bill trouble. But I also have a number of technical and legal concerns with various amendments. But I know I only have 3 minutes, so I'm not going to get into all of those. And I've explained a lot of those to various folks. I'll stop there.
Thank you. Mr. Winkles.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. I am appearing in, I have not digested the new bill, but as to the -16s of 1511, I have a couple of comments to make. One thing I would draw your attention to, it would allow a city to adopt an ordinance that would place a marijuana dispensary within 500 feet of a school, provided that there was a physical barrier to that. We don't object to and are supportive of this language. There are some instances where it would be appropriate to do so, where it may as well be 10,000 feet because you have to cross a freeway or a river or something along those lines to get to the school. But you might have a great location where neighbors don't object that you'd have to pass up under the current 1,000-foot perimeter rule. So moving that forward would certainly be helpful. Additionally, We have no significant concerns with the early start provision as written in the bill. We will be having some conversations with OHA in regards to their rules allowing who will be permitted to make the early sales. We're aware that there are a number of dispensaries. I believe that number the last check was 85 that had significant inventory violations. We believe the language is sufficient to allow them to prevent a dispensary that's not in good standing to participate in the early start. And I also think the language is wouldn't impede a local government from preventing a dispensary that's not in good standing from participating as well. With that, I'm eager for your questions.
Any questions? I want to note on that issue that we asked Mark Mayer about whether local jurisdictions and OLCC have whether OLCC has the right to refuse to issue a license for an applicant that, for example, is not in compliance with tax obligations for early start. If they're a dispensary and they haven't registered for and aren't paying the taxes that they need to for adult use sales under the early start program or other violations, and it sounds like OLCC, we don't need to enshrine that in statute because OLCC does have that authority, but I know that I, for one, think it's important that we stay on the right foot with this, and so we'll encourage OLCC to look at compliance with the rules of the program that people have been involved with up to now as they are making their decisions. Anybody else have comments? Okay, thank you. And Mr. Lewis, why don't we try? You're welcome to go, both of you. And we have on deck Nikki Terziev, Don Morris, and Tess Milo.
Now, could you, if I could just make a comment, as someone who lives more than 100 miles away, I'm going to be heading out soon to try to get home tonight. If I could suggest, perhaps preference could be given to people who live at a distance, the folks who belong to the lobby, who we all adore, but we get to see them all the time. Okay. So if it's possible to take care of the people who travel distance, I appreciate it. And for those of you whose testimony I won't hear live, I will watch the video of it when I get home to Ashland, either tonight or tomorrow morning. Just try to take care of our folks here.
Hi, it's Paul Lewis.
Hi, Mr. Lewis. It's Ann Leininger. We are calling you from a room full of lots of people on the Marijuana Legalization Committee public hearing on House Bill or Senate Bill 1511, and would love to have you offer 3 minutes of insights if you have something that you want to share with the committee.
Yeah, that'd be great. I apologize for the mix up. But Co-Chair Leininger and Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Paul Lewis. I'm a practicing pediatrician, and I also serve as the Tri-County Public Health Officer for Clackamas-Multnomah and Washington counties. I also serve on both the OLCC and OHA Rules Advisory Committees for Marijuana Implementation, and overall a very strong set of rules emerging and being refined. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on some of the proposed amendments to the marijuana statutes under discussion this session. One amendment pending intended to restrict the ability of the Oregon Health Authority to limit the doses and sizes of marijuana edibles in a package. The Oregon Pediatric Society, the Oregon Poison Center, and the Portland Metro County Public Health officials oppose this idea and actually strongly recommend the simple language used in Washington State, which is a single sentence that says, if there's more than one serving in a package, each serving must be packaged individually in childproof packaging. As a pediatrician and parent, this seems like just common sense to me. Most people don't think of marijuana in milligrams. The proposed adult serving of 10 milligrams is dangerous to a toddler, and a proposed 100 milligrams per package would literally lead to a coma in a child of that size. Since many of these edibles come as cookies, brownies, and candy, we cannot expect pre-verbal children or even adults to stop at a single bite. With regard to the proposed Dash-4 amendment, we oppose allowing cannabis cafes in Multnomah County. since it conflicts with our overarching goals of improving air quality indoors and out. To do so, we continue to do everything possible to strengthen Wington, the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act. This act was created to protect employees as well as the public from the dangers of secondhand smoke throughout workplaces, allowing future exemptions like allowing cannabis clubs to allow vaping and indoor smoking could lead to a slippery slope and allow for more exemptions. Finally, I want to address the issue of marijuana-infused topicals. There's currently a vigorous and active discussion of this topic as regulators and healthcare providers learn more about this class of products. I personally remain open to all considerations around the topicals, but respectfully request that these discussions be referred to a rules process where more time can be spent in exploring the details about the benefits of these products as well as any possible harms before decisions are made. Thanks for your willingness and attention to allow me to do this by phone today. As some of you know, we're dealing with an emerging outdoor air quality issue here in the Portland metro area.
Thank you so much. Yes, that is an important issue, too. So we appreciate your testimony. Thank you. All right. So we are now going to have the panel that we identified before, and then we are going to transition in response to Representative Buckley's request, which I think was a very good and valid one. We're going to go next to people who've traveled more than 100 miles. And that includes, so for the following panel, after Nikki Terzieff, Don Morrison, Tess Milo, we're going to have Jeremy Kletke and Matt Cyrus, both of Deschutes County, and Peter Gendron of Josephine County as the next panel. Welcome. Please state your name for the record, and we'd love to have you offer your thoughts in 3 minutes or less.
Sure. Hello, Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Leininger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tess Milio, representing Green Star Growing, here today in support of Senate Bill 1511 with the Dash 16 amendments. We want to thank the committee for the important issues it's chosen to take up, given the limited time this session. Senate Bill 1511 with the Dash 16s will be critically important to the industry. We are particularly supportive of the early start piece for extracts and edibles, the expanded access the bill provides, the delay of effective plant limit dates, and allowing medical patients to buy marijuana tax-free, recreational marijuana tax-free. All of those concepts will help the new industry thrive in the short term and the long term. So we look forward to working with you on the third bill that I know is coming out soon, LC 314. And in the meantime, we encourage you to adopt the Dash 16s and pass the bill out. Thank you.
Thank you. Nikki Terzieff here on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. We represent nearing 70 now Oregon-based small businesses, as we like to say, from harvest to home, and all the stops in between. We are incredibly supportive of SB 1511 with the Dash 16s. We are pleased and grateful for the patient taxation piece, exempting those patients, protecting them from further additional costs as they go to access their medicine in this kind of changing and shifting market. In Section 21, the expanded definition for extracts is another point that we greatly appreciate, and the energetic instruction or nod around what is expected of the agency when it comes to rulemaking is going to be important for us as well. I think we acknowledge the importance of patients being able to follow the path that they've been on. Measure 91 was not intended to change the patient's program, the medical program, and we're pleased that the committee has acknowledged that. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Donald Morris, and I'm chair of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. I would like to thank all of you for the hard work that's gone in this short session in preparing these bills. I would like to say that the organization supports 1511, the Dash 16s, with one minor caveat, and that it appears that the Senate Bill 1598 will also be a great boon to setting up the industry the way it needs to run. I'm glad to hear that Senator Burdick is willing to join us and sit down with the Oregon Health Authority. We still have very deep concerns about their willingness to allow medical patients who have had access as they needed for the last 16 years to continue. We're afraid of that being stopped, and I'm not at all certain that the language that's here would necessarily do it. So I would very much like to work with you, Senator, on trying to find a solution there. And I would especially like to thank Representative Helm for his lead in making sure that patients were not going to be taxed. That was the thing we came out with the most when at the beginning of the session, and I'm glad to see that it's made it through. So again, thank you for all your work.
Thank you. And thanks to both Rep. Olson and Rep. Helm. I think you both are co-chiefs of that bill.
Yeah, sorry.
So that's awesome.
That's okay. That's fine.
I'm very sorry, Andy.
All right. Thank you. All right. The next panel we have is going to be folks from more than 100 miles away, Jeremy Kletke, Matt Cyrus, and Peter Gendron. And then the next panel we have on deck after that will be Mr. and Mrs. Coria John? Do you know who you are? Yes, good. So there seem to be two of you, and then let's add Mike Rocklin also to that panel that's on deck. Welcome.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving me this audience for these 3 minutes. My name is Peter Gendron. I am here from Sunny Valley. As you know, I also have a office in Salem now up the street in order to facilitate my endeavors to help guide the committee on the topics that are socially and politically responsible. We want to be able to allow you to have a place where you can support the development of an emerging business and industry while still attending to the concerns of your socially conservative constituents. Some people have been amazed when they've found out numbers over the course of the last year or so here regarding the development of the cannabis business and industry as it's coming into a regulated nature. Specifically, the awareness of what has been going on for all of these years is now coming into the public light. And for people that aren't as familiar with it as I am, sometimes that's surprising. We'll be addressing some of those concerns through the recommendations that will be implemented later this year and into the next legislative session from the Task Force on Implementing Senate Bill 844. I had the pleasure of serving on that committee as representative of cannabis. By appointment of our governor, I believe that our report that came out on Monday was very thorough and was a good start, but we need, in order to have those proposals to work, for the Oregon Cannabis Research Institute to work, we need to have very solid adult use and medical use programs in place. We need to be supporting our hemp program at the same time. We need to acknowledge the fact that there are 32,000 medical growers that have been growing for the last 17 years, substantially unregulated, yet still largely within the bounds of what our federal government has considered to be acceptable. I don't sit in this chair in front of you today representing myself or any business or industry. In fact, I've been told specifically by the Ethics Commission that I cannot lobby for the plant cannabaceae because the plant cannabaceae, the subspecies, the indicas, sativas, and the ruderalis that I represent, are not entities. They cannot pay me. They have no voice. That is why I'm here. I'm also here on behalf of almost 78,000 current patients and tens of thousands of patients who have departed over the last 17 years of this program because they simply can't be here. I'm here for my 16 patients. I'm here for Clifford's 48 patients that are all in assisted care facilities or palliative care facilities. They're nearing the ends of their lives, and they can't have their voices heard here, and that's why I'm here. I appreciate what is being done with 1511 specifically. I still have some concerns about 4014, but I believe they're going to be addressed in the subsequent bill. I'm very appreciative to the attention that you've given to these issues because we have a lot of things that we need to work on. There are a lot of other issues in Oregon, but the fact of the matter is that some of those problems you'll find are remediated through responsible regulation in the cannabis business and industry. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
I'll go ahead and go. Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick,
committee members. My name is Jeremy Kletke. I represent Davis Farms. I'm the founder and CEO of Davis Farms of Oregon. I myself, my history is I have a little over 20 years of experience in commercial cultivation of cannabis. I've worked in four countries cultivating cannabis. I'm really proud to be sitting here in front of you today while Oregon brings in this new era of cannabis. It's a wonderful thing, and I want to commend you for your progressive thinking as we implement this policy. I would like to say that we are in support of 1511, overwhelming support, actually. It reflects a lot of consideration that you guys have taken for patients. I'm proud again to say, as a future recreational cannabis cultivator, that I see all of the consideration for our medical patients addressed here. We should be able to help them with a nice, smooth, easy transition into this new market. So we are here to support 1511 and the Dash 16 amendments, and again, appreciate all your work on this, and hope to see this push through. And following on the legislative concept of or the 1598 that's coming up, from what we see there, that is an absolutely wonderful bill. It looks like just a follow-up to this that is going to help to foster in this so cleanly. So we appreciate all your continued efforts here, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Matt Cyrus. I'm a sixth-generation farmer from Deschutes County, and I also serve as president of Deschutes County Farm Bureau, although I'm here representing myself as opposed to the board. They may not agree with some of the latitude granted in the proposed bill, but first I'd like to start with the 1511 and the Dash 16 amendments. I think make a lot of sense. Looks like there's a lot of thought and effort gone into creating language that creates a smooth transition from those producing medically to commercially. We have a lot of interest from farmers in Central Oregon about the possibilities of finally, since in the last 40 years we haven't had a viable cash crop, that we might actually have the opportunity to have one. Certainly looking forward to that. With regard to the proposal on 1598 that's upcoming, like I say, I might differ from my board. I'm sure they would be might strongly object to the right to farm carve-out. However, given the nature of this particular crop, I personally think it makes a lot of sense to allow the counties the latitude to have some flexibilities to work into this on a little slower, more gradual basis. I think it addresses some of the concerns, especially raised by the Deschutes County Commission. I think it makes more sense to give them an avenue to move forward and, like I say, work their way into this crop. If it takes a small carve-out on right to farm, so be it. The one thing I would ask for consideration is, down the road, maybe a sunset on the right to farm, so that as growing of both recreation and medical marijuana, as well as hemp, all become mainstream, that the right to farm carve-outs maybe disappear and go away. Other than that, I think this makes a lot of sense. I appreciate the recognition that medical marijuana is, in fact, an agricultural crop with the protections and recognition of other agricultural crops. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Yes, Representative Helm.
Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. And Jeremy and Matt, thanks so much for coming over. I know you've either been here constantly or made many trips over from the Bend area in the last few weeks. And I really want to commend you on your open-mindedness about this, what I view as a necessary but minor incursion into the right to farm. These are statutes that farmers have held essentially inviolate for 40 years, and they're one of the reasons that we have the vibrant agricultural economy that we have in the state. But thank you for your constructive thinking here, and I very much wish you luck and good results with your county commission in making this work. It was designed to help exactly that problem.
Thank you for your efforts.
Thank you very much. All right, so next up we have Mr. and Mrs. Coria Farm, or a name similar to that I hope you'll clarify for me. My apologies for getting it wrong. And then I believe we were also going to have Mike Rockland come. And then on deck, I'd like to have Megan Phillips, Michael Cowley, and Lindsay Reinhardt, please.
Hello, my name is Corey Allen Johns, and I'm representing myself as a medical marijuana grower and patient, and also my daughter Jade, who's 3 years or 5 years old, and has
Gervais syndrome,
like Charlotte Feige. And if it wasn't for cannabis, she wouldn't be doing as good as she is doing right now. I just strongly ask you guys to please consider our small farms' rights to grow for our children and ourselves without having to enter in any market. We've been growing for over 10 years, and we've never sold anything to dispensaries. And we'd like to just keep our rights the way they are for us to grow for our family and small farmers without having any of our constitutional rights violated with, like, unnecessary searches and stuff through our houses and any violations to our Second Amendment rights also. Okay. I saw that you guys were thinking about making it so we can't have firearms on a grow site. And you know, that's something that's very concerning to me as a United States citizen, because our Second Amendment rights are already under attack enough, and we should be able to retain those rights and also our Fourth Amendment rights. As a small grower and as a large grower, it's very important for us to be able to provide medicine in a safe manner. And sometimes, you know, 5 or 10 minutes away is a lot when our house is getting broken into. We've been working with Lincoln County for over, you know, 10 years on the growing issues with safety and concerns. We've more than put forth proper security features. And I don't think you guys are realizing how much money these small growers have invested into the OMMP and the medical program, as far as, you know, how much it's cost us to grow for our children. And we're just kind of asking you to please preserve our rights as an OMMP patient. And sorry, I'm not very good at public speaking, but thank you.
You did a great job. You did a great job. Do we? Can you clarify, Adam, if the gun that we took out, something on firearms, right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, provisions relating to firearms and specifically possession of firearms at a marijuana medical marijuana grow site was a topic of conversation during House Bill 3400 in a previous legislative session. It's not before or within the legislative concepts currently in front of the committee for this year.
I appreciate you upholding our constitutional rights today. Thank you.
Thanks.
And I'd also just like to say that if we could please keep it so we could grow medicine for our children, because a lot of us cannot afford to buy it from the dispensary, and our family is one of those. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms.
I just came for support.
Okay, great. Thank you all for coming and sharing your views. And then Mr. Rockland, and you're welcome to get up now if you need to. Mr. Rockland, please go ahead. And again, we've got Lindsay Reinhardt, Megan Phillips, and Michael Cawley on deck.
Thank you, Representative Leininger, Burdick, co-chairs and committee. Testified here before. I'm a member of the American Cannabis Nurse Association, so my basis is the medical aspects, and my understanding of the main goal of this short session is to help with some fixes in order to streamline the regulatory process. So I'll be brief. Got a few points. Something I heard today earlier from Paul Lewis, I think it was talking about childproof with each individual dose. I don't know of any other pharmaceuticals done like that, so I would think that we want to be a little bit cautious on that aspect as long as it's controlled. So consider that we have adequate controls when you've put the contents in a childproof container or locked box. That's one aspect. The other thing was the Clean Air Act. If you eliminated smoking, would that be acceptable? Because that's what the Clean Air Act was about, smoking, not vaporizing or anything else. So consider that in terms of the Clean Air Act amendments, how we can make that work. The other thing is that I've looked through these documents, drafts, and the word medical grade concerns me a little bit, only because that connotes purity, not necessarily potency. So just think about something else, maybe strength, or leave it and change it. But the words will mean something as we go through with the publicity to people as they hear medical grade, and I'm concerned about those words linked together, meaning something different in the statute than the intent normally as used with medical grade equipment, supplies, and things. That'll matter in the future when we go with research and medical grade things. So two comments specifically. One about money, which you just heard a little bit. It costs a lot, and for people to grow for their own, that's really good. But the fees that cardholders pay are fairly high, and most of that money has not been dedicated, none that I know of has been dedicated to the OMP program. So I'd like that reviewed in terms of either changing or adding something to it, maybe in this Christmas tree bill, to make sure that those are funds dedicated from cardholder fees back into the system to either reduce fees or research or those kinds of things. So I propose that be carefully looked at right now. A year ago, the ACCM recommended they have an annual review. I don't know that that's happened. I haven't seen anything publicly posted except for June of last year, and that's kind of far behind. So if there could be a follow-up to that, I'd really appreciate to find out. There's millions of dollars at stake that cardholders have contributed. So the second thing is the attending physician statement, the APS as it's known. The attending physician is a doctor of medicine or doctor of osteopathy, DRMD. Those are the only two people right now that can write recommendations. However, in the statute, and I believe it was maybe it's the regulation, they talk about a consultant who is referred to by not only the primary care physician, but the physician's assistant or nurse practitioner. So I'd like those two professions at least added to clarify. Let's look at clarifying this is what I'm up to. So thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. All right, so now we have Lindsay Reinhart, Megan Phillips, and Michael Cawley. And on deck we have Bo Whitney, John Udnall, and Edgar Diaz, please.
Megan Phillips has chosen not to speak.
Okay, thank you.
Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Leininger, my name is Lindsay Reinhart. I'm a lobbyist for Portland Normal and for Sirius Enterprises. My testimony from Portland Normal today is in regard to the Dash 4 amendment. Last session, the legislature amended the Indoor Clean Air Act to avoid the patchwork of local regulations regarding the vaporization of nicotine and access by children. Most of the legislation added vaporized and aerosolized nicotine and to restrictions in place regarding tobacco, placement of products above child height, no consumption at point of sale, etc. Representative Barker and an OSP trooper requested an amendment to treat cannabinoids like nicotine and enable enforcement of the prohibition of public use, particularly for vape pens. I testified, this is Leland Berger saying, he testified against the proposal and presented the scientific evidence that there was no harm for exhaled vaporized cannabis, secondhand vapor, which is also true for smoked cannabis. OHA's Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee's false claim to the contrary notwithstanding. He left the building with the understanding so that as long as the location was private, i.e. membership fee was assessed at the door, and there are no employees, cannabis clubs would be permitted. Last fall, OHA promulgated rules to implement the amendment, which made clear that such clubs would not be permitted and that there was a complaint made to the county health department, the club would be fined $500 a day. Our friend Madeline Martinez has already been threatened by the Multnomah County with fines regarding the world-famous Cannabis Cafe. The Dash 4 amendment corrects the oversights in a common-sense manner, and the committee should adopt the amendment. Regarding OHA's concerns, our thoughts are that the accurate ones can be addressed in the session as part of SB 1511 or later in the Christmas tree bill, and those where without merit can be easily disregarded. In regard to Sirius Enterprises, I would like to thank this committee for their hard work on the Dash 16 amendment. We fully support this amendment with very little exception. We very much appreciate the tax-free options for the patients, the modified Luxes. I mean, it's really great language. The only thing that I would really urge the committee to do is adopt Representative Olson's Dash 3 amendment, which directly affects Section 15, Number 2B, which is the dosages for OHA by rule. I have been present at every RAC meeting in this regard, and they do not want to listen to us. And the patient dosages by condition, without having the doctors there with scientific evidence saying what that recommended dosage is going to be, is going to make this very hard for us in this RAC. We have been working endlessly with the OHA to achieve this goal, and they will not hear us. Every patient's dosage is different. It's not something that the Oregon Health Authority should be regulating. And to have that be part of that language, we do feel will allow them a mass overstep.
Thank you. Any questions, thoughts for the panel? Okay. And I believe you indicated that Megan Phillips is declining to testify. Okay, thank you for letting us know. Yes, go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Co-chairs, members, thank you very much. My name is Michael Cawley. I'm the owner and grower of Geek Farms. We're a small family farm located in unincorporated Lincoln County. I'd like to thank you for working so hard on this legislative session. I would initially like to show my support for SB 1511 and the Dash 16 amendments. I would also like to show my support for the Dash 12 / Dash 1718 amendments, which mostly focus on the Lux, flexibility on that. Being an unincorporated county, rural county, it's very difficult to try to make all of these things happen. For one, I'm in the north part of Lincoln County. The county offices are in the south part of Lincoln County. It's a two-hour drive, so to get anything accomplished with the county is very hard. So, just so you know, those kind of amendments too would really encourage small and rural grows to move out of the gray market without the pushback from small towns and counties with unjust and overreaching rules. One of the things that you did mention was the agricultural aspect of medical cannabis. And one thing, unfortunately, I'm already in the middle of a lawsuit with Lincoln County because of exactly that. They basically said I couldn't have a greenhouse to grow medical cannabis because medical cannabis isn't considered an agricultural crop. It's a very difficult stage to be in. I've been in this fight for over 7 months. So that's my biggest concern on those dashes, and I would fully support the wording of an agricultural crop for medical cannabis because, one, the medical opt-in option that we have is basically not having the agricultural right for medical cannabis is virtually eliminating that option for me. I don't have that option in Lincoln County. Anyway, past that, lastly, I would like to address the two-year residency requirement that was proposed to be removed from HB 3400. We're talking about that in the treehouse or the Christmas tree bill as well. I would really, really support bringing that back in. And the reason why, the cannabis industry of Oregon has had a long and hard fight to get the ability to do business what we've been doing already. Out-of-state growers aren't here in this room fighting for our rights to do what we've been doing for decades. All I ask is that this council gives Oregon growers a shot in this market. Colorado adopted a residency requirement initially, and although it wasn't flawless, it did give the native Coloradans a chance to get going before the massive corporate grows came in and undercut the little guy with small margins and mass market share. Don't let this industry be tainted by the corporate agenda. That's it. Thank you for your time and support.
Thank you. You know, I want to call out one of the points that you made, the desire to have medical cannabis become a farm crop designated and getting those protections is in the third bill. So,
great. I fully support that. Thank you so much.
We're trying hard. We may not be checking everybody's every single box, but we're trying really
absolutely
hard.
Absolutely, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. Okay, now on to the next panel, which is Bo Whitney, John Hudnall, and Edgar Diaz, please. And on deck we have Megan Graham, Norris Munson, and Ellen Ford, please. And you may speak in any order. Please just state your name for the record.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Bo Whitney. I'm representing Golden Leaf Holdings in Greenpoint, Oregon. I wanted to thank the committee for the efforts on these two bills. I feel these two bills are successful in balancing the many different perspectives and concerns while still maintaining good public safety. The early oil and edible sales addresses some potential Oregon exposure to the coal memorandum, so that's a very positive step. The addressing of the plant count and reductions and transitions from medical into the regulated market will help make process much smoother and successful. We feel that this bill is good for not only Golden Leaf Holdings, but good for the industry and good for the state of Oregon. So Golden Leaf Holdings supports Senate Bill 1511-16 as it is good, sound public policy.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs and the rest of the committee. I applaud you guys' hard work with all these issues we have. My name is John Hudnall. I'm a father, a veteran, and a longtime medical grower. I'm here to voice my support and for the Dash 12 and Dash 18 amendments. My family spent our savings on a facility to get into this new industry. In November, a city ordinance was enacted that forced us to shut down our operations, and we don't really have the resources to move every time a jurisdiction decides to change their ordinances. The growers had to move out to not face a $500 a day fine through the city. And so I'm hoping with those amendments that we'd be allowed to move back in. We do have a long-term lease on this facility. I also I support the cannabis cafes, and I feel that the Clean Air Act shouldn't really work for them because the people that are there are wanting to smoke. They're wanting to be around the smoke. So I don't see how that's an issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the committee, my name is Edgar Diaz. I'm a 2L at Willamette University College of Law, and I'm the president of Law Students for Sensible Drug Policy at Willamette University. I would like to show my support towards the Dash 4 amendment under SB 1511, creating an exemption for cannabis cafes under the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act. First, cannabis cafes create a safe place for consumers and patients to safely consume cannabis. Since cannabis has not been shown to cause chronic diseases nor cause cancer, and since no one has ever directly died from cannabis consumption, it is only logical to conclude that cannabis is safer than tobacco and alcohol. Despite this, we still allow for cigar bars and restaurants that serve alcohol throughout Oregon. Therefore, since the threat from cannabis is lower than those substances, there should be an exemption to the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act to give Oregonians a safe place to consume cannabis, since we do the same for tobacco and alcohol. Second, it is also important to focus on public health and safety and the risk of promoting cannabis consumption among minors and children. Cannabis cafes would not promote the use of cannabis among children. In fact, they would reduce the appeal that cannabis consumption may have among children because it will stop the conspicuous use of cannabis in public areas, such as parks, sidewalks, and areas near schools. Therefore, instead, people will not gather and consume cannabis in a public area where children can potentially see. As a result, this mitigates the negative effects that cannabis may have on children because they will not be exposed nor be motivated to use cannabis. In conclusion, I believe Oregon needs to lead the way and demonstrate to the rest of the country how to safely consume cannabis. Therefore, I want to show my support towards the Dash 4 amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the panel? Okay. Thank you, all of you. All right. So now we have Norris Munson, Megan Graham, and Ellen Ford. And on deck, we have Ben Hoffman, Jonathan Manton, and Lisa Nato. Patience. It takes a while, and it's the end of a long week. So thank you for coming. You may speak in any order. Just be sure you state your name for the record before you begin.
Hi, I'm Megan Graham, here on behalf of my company Gem Farms and my patients. Two things. And between the rack and here, I don't know the most appropriate place to input this. And so I'm sorry if it's a little off topic.
Oh, no. Go ahead. This is your
Although
time.
Although I'm in support of 1511-16s for the most part.
Okay.
So there was a definition in one of the draft rules about industrial hemp infused CBD products. Mm-hmm. The dispensary may only accept the transfer of and may only transfer a product that contains THC or CBD derived from marijuana. And I'm opposition of that. My products are infused with CBD from industrial hemp because I'm interested in the medical aspects. We do have a medical garden, but We're more for the medical side of things, and so we do have industrial hemp products. The OHA should not have an outright prohibition on industrial hemp products, and should allow cardholders to transfer those products to medical dispensaries. I take my to help my dispensary clients and patients feel safer, I still take my product testing, labeling, and packaging very seriously and follow the guidelines as outlined in the OMMP rules and regs. I'm following the same rules as the cannabis producers, so I disagree with proposing to leave out the CBD from industrial hemp. I've also got some written testimony from at least one of my patients that I've been in her life as her grower for 3 years, almost four now, and this is not to say that I don't have Western doctor support that is totally essential. This is not a replacement of Western medicine, but added to it, it makes the difference of a lifetime. It makes a difference in the steps. Trying to keep it short. Medical cannabis works for breakthrough pain, but has totally taken my pain, mine, and cut it in half. If I did not have access to my medical marijuana, I don't know what I would do. I think that I would have more steps than I take since I started using medical marijuana. I have recovered from things that you're not supposed to recover from. They're scared. I live in the Portland city limits, and I have 10 patients between all of us that are growing there, and we're not sure where we're going to put them all, and I just don't want to give up on them because they're we have nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if you had testimony you want to submit to the record and have us post it online, you, I believe, may give it to Ms. Nelson right there. Thank you. Thanks for being here and testifying. Yes, sir.
Hello, and thank you. Chairs Leninger and Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Norris Munson, and I'm a member of the Oregon Cannabis Association and the founder of Cultivated Industries, a vertically integrated producer of craft cannabis and flower and extracts. We employ 25 Oregonians at competitive pay and offering generous benefits to full-time workers. I am here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1511-16. Senate Bill 1511-16's expanded access provision is important to OMMP patients because it ensures continued access to high-quality medical cannabis products offered at affordable price, even as the majority of Oregon's dispensaries transition to licensure under the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. It is also important to Oregon businesses like mine who want to serve both patients and adults while meeting the rigorous compliance standards required by the OLCC. Expanded access is an elegant solution to the regulatory issues posed by co-location because it broadens the opportunities for businesses while reducing the risk of contradictory or duplicative regulations. As a maker of extracts, I am also a strong supporter of the provisions in Senate Bill 1511-16 that will expand Oregon's successful Early Start program by making extracts, edibles, and oils available to adults and licensed dispensaries. These products are extremely popular. They account for nearly half of cannabis sales in Colorado, and they should be made available to adults now that the Oregon Health Authority has developed rules to safeguard public health. Finally, I and my colleagues in Oregon's cannabis business community support 1511-16 because its numerous technical adjustments, like the stay-on-plant limits, will allow cultivators and processors to make a much smoother transition into the adult-use system and further our shared goal of curtailing the unregulated market. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I urge the committee to move the 16 amendments today. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Burdick and Co-Chair Leininger and members of the committee. My name is Ellen Ford, and I am the co-founder of Clear Creek Botanicals. I'm here today to once again ask you to please free the lotions. What does that mean? It means allowing topical cannabis products to be sold outside of the OLCC distribution network and the OHA distribution network. The reason that we are asking for this is because they are non-psychoactive for two reasons. One, because they are applied topically, and two, because they have such a low amount of THC in them. Simply stated, they do not make you high. Excuse me, I have a little frog this afternoon in my throat. These products are not intended to be ingested. They are intended to be applied to the skin and the hair. We have formulated our products for two reasons. One is to help with arthritic pain or pain, muscle pain, some of the symptoms of MS. Those are the products in the medical field. The other line of products that we have developed are for the skin. Many things. Studies in Israel and Japan have shown that cannabis is very good for the skin. And I've personally found that it has helped with skin, with pre-skin cancer nodules. I use a bubble bath that is infused with cannabis, and what I used to have the dermatologist take off of my skin are now completely gone from if I take a bubble bath once a week with infused cannabis. We are asking that Amendment 14 would allow for the sales of these products outside of the OLCC-controlled facilities, such as in alternate medical facilities, health food stores, home parties, things of that nature. Allowing these sales is pretty much the same as allowing the sales of extracts in the grocery stores. I went the other day to the grocery store and started cruising the aisles for things that had alcohol in them. Much to my surprise, first I went to vanilla extracts. And next to the vanilla extract was the lemon extract that comes in at 83% alcohol. Same with the orange extract. And the peppermint extract topped out at 87% alcohol. So, obviously, the argument that this is dangerous to children if they ate something that was topical just doesn't make a lot of sense when they could go to the store and get, you know, some alcohol. Some of our opponents try to say that these would be very detrimental if eaten. I contend, oops, it looks like my time is up. Washington State has legalized topicals to be sold throughout non-cannabis stores.
Thank you so much. I think
yeah, Madam Chair, thanks. Ellen, so let's talk. I want to zero in on what you just said.
Sure.
Okay, so I heard that you use a bubble bath.
Yes,
I
do.
That's basically infused topical.
Yes.
What's the percentage?
Less than 1% THC.
Okay. Yeah, I know that Washington is at 0.03.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any idea at all if that's effective at all at that level?
The products that we have produced run anywhere from 0.3 to 0.8%, and that's common for our colleagues in the topical industry. But we're all testing out at less than 1%.
Okay, that helps me. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Okay. Thank you for your question. Okay.
Thank you all so much for being here. We really appreciate it. All right. We now have Ben Hoffman, Jonathan Manton, and Lisa Nato. And on deck, we have Jeff Sugarman, Hovering LaPlante, and Chris Steps.
Want me to start? Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Nato, representing Phylos Bioscience. We want to thank you for your hard work, your deliberation, and the thoughtful process that you've engaged in to accomplish these changes you're accomplishing this session. We support the Dash 16 amendments to Senate Bill 1511. It provides some needed improvements to the cannabis system. We agree with the co-chair that the dosage limits should not be set in statute, but rather by rule. This bill provides needed tax relief for cardholders. We applaud that. And with the good work that we've seen from the Oregon Health Authority, we believe the early start with the appropriate testing requirements will be beneficial for the state and the system. We applaud the fact that you're continuing the work on the outstanding issues. We appreciate your continued support to refine the statutes to support small growers and allow them to participate in legal markets. We are concerned about low-income cardholders and access to the medications they need for their conditions, and we look forward to working with Representative Buckley on a proposal that might help address that issue. And finally, we do support any solutions that we can come to with respect to the topicals and lotions. So thank you for your continued work, and we appreciate your service.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So my name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild. And you know, we've had some really direct and heartfelt conversations in these last few days. And I want to make sure each of you know how much respect I have and the clients that I represent have for this process. There's some things that I kind of always say a lot, that there's one thing I think that every elected official has in common, and maybe only one thing. But that's that they got more votes than anybody else who ran against them. So you're here for a reason, and we respect the position that you sit in, no matter what we're talking about. And we can have disagreements, and we can do so in ways that are respectful, certainly of the process and of the individuals that are on this committee. The farms that we are working on and working to protect, I think there was a statement I would say that I think Rep. Leininger mentioned, which is perfect, is essentially that as our understanding of medical cannabis evolves, I want to make the point that we are learning about the medical cannabis and these different strains that are on some of these farms that I've been able to visit, that many of you have been able to visit. And protecting those strains is just of such critical importance. And part of why I'm so passionate about protecting these family farmers and the small farms there, it's not just because the people sometimes get a bad rap that I don't think they deserve, and I've met them and know them, but also because these medical strains are so potentially important for what we're going to learn as this science evolves. And as we learn about the difference between the outdoor plants grown under the full spectrum of sunlight when they're harvested, as compared to an indoor plant grown under artificial light, our folks say that's different. You get different medical results. And so we're just striving as hard as we can to protect those strains and protect those farms. Thank you so much for the work I think that a lot of people have gone into with regard to the Lux problem. Rob Bovet has done tremendous work there behind the scenes, I think, to come up with this. And I understand it's going to be in 1598. I'm just looking at a draft of that now. That's great. The second piece that we've been pushing so far hard for is the I think is going to be fixed for the right to farm carve out. We might want to get a little bit of clarity on that to make sure with regard to the county setback problem. Like the setback that we understand is kind of problematic for our farms would be like a 250-foot setback that the counties would impose on plants, not necessarily on the buildings, but I'm not sure of those. We may need to seek some clarity to make sure that we're getting that protected, because the lot sizes are small enough that if you've got a 250-foot setback for the plants, you may not be able to have enough room to grow the actual plants. And then finally, one thing I'm hoping that we can change on 1598 or add to it is to make sure that there's the ability for the processors to transfer not just directly to other processors and to dispensaries, but for the processors, medical processors, to be able to transfer directly to patients. I think Cedar Gray is the perfect example of that, with the tinctures that he shows and the oils that he's created. He can be a medical processor, but still wants to make sure that you can have that direct transfer to patients in that instance. And with that, I'll just say thank you. We want to echo the comments that the gentleman from Lincoln County made, and those were just, I think, he nailed it as far as everything that we're here to push for. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Before you start, Mr. Hoffman, I wanted to note that I think that we are trying to get that you may transfer back to the producer / patient processed material language built into 1598. So it's not in, probably not in what you're seeing there, but there have been conversations about that. So thank you. Dr. Hoffman, welcome.
Co-Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm a pediatrician at Dornbecker Children's in Portland. I'm also the medical director of the Tom Sargent Safety Center there, and a member of the executive committee on the Council on Injury, Violence, and Poison Prevention of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I'm here representing both the Oregon Pediatric Society and OHSU. It's been amazing each time I've had the opportunity to testify on this topic about the passion with which people speak and the degree to which the growers, the retailers, and the practitioners care about their users, especially with the medical practitioners we heard from today, the deep affection they have for their patients. I'm here because of the same thing. My patients, however, will not be using recreational marijuana or most often medical marijuana for their own purposes. They will be exposed to it inadvertently. And we need to make sure that the patients that we've heard about today do not lead to my having more patients. Simply put, you can't injury-proof a child, and we need to make sure we protect children from threats that exist in their environment. If you've ever met a three-year-old, they're tough. They're impulsive, they're quick, and they can't be reasoned with. And to a three-year-old, a cookie is a cookie. And if you show a three-year-old these cookies, they're not going to be able to identify the fact that the one on the right could potentially put them in a coma because this is a marijuana edible from Colorado, whereas this cookie is a normal peanut butter cookie. Every parent tries to be vigilant. Nobody is perfect, and things happen. So despite best intentions, we need to make sure that we are thinking about policies as we go forward with recreational marijuana that are mindful of the 900,000 children in Oregon who do not have a voice in this process. That's why I'm here today. Experience shows that in both Washington and Colorado, again, despite best intentions, kids were hurt. In Washington, in just the last 2 years, the number of calls to the Poison Center have gone up basically 100%. Experience in Colorado shows a 46% overall increase in marijuana-related hospitalizations and an 800% increase in hospitalizations due to toxicity from marijuana just at Colorado Children's. If we are not mindful about how especially edibles are stored and what the doses are within those items, more kids are going to get hurt. Simply put, as we go forward, the voice of kids needs to be considered. We can act now to prevent harm to children, or we can wait, and bad things will happen. Thank you for the opportunity, and I'd be delighted to answer questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Yes, sir, Representative Helm.
Madam Co-Chair, during our last meeting, we had a chance as a committee to talk about amendments to the bill that probably weren't going to be discussed. I think Amendment 5 is likely to be one of those. And today, at the appropriate time, I'd like to say something, but I don't want to interrupt the testimony. So if you want that now, we can do it.
Yeah, I think now would be a good time. Thanks.
So I appreciate the testimony on childproofing our products, and I'm the author of the Dash 5 amendment, which recommends putting a floor, not a ceiling, a floor on how we prescribe the dosage and the serving size of products that are going to go into the edibles industry. And I very much appreciate that we are tiptoeing now into the area of adult use edibles, and it's more than a tiptoe, it's a baby step tiptoe. I think it's going to strike the public that uses these products as ridiculous, but I respect the caution. And one of the things that I've observed in my research is that the standard that I've suggested in the Dash 5 amendment is the industry standard for adult use. And we've been having that size and amount for many, many years now. And we do not have the levels of problems, for example, with alcohol or with household products. It's far more harmful to children in those areas than cannabis. It was anticipatable that we would have high rates of increase in calls to poison control about cannabis in the past few years since it was illegal before. Now people are feeling free to go ahead and call. But I would just urge everybody that as we move forward to a time where OLCC's rules are going to be implemented to allow edibles at some point in the future, that we all try to rely on a data and evidence-based approach and not simply let our worst fears guide the legislation. Thanks for letting me talk about that, Madam Chair.
I think that's, thank you. And to build on that, I want to note that, so we are not expecting to move the Dash 5 amendments this session. And there are some other public health implicating, or there are some other aspects of cannabis legislation that have gotten people in the public health community very anxious. And since this is a short session, I want to echo what Representative Helm said, that you know, this is going to be a process that evolves and moves forward as we figure out where we are once the first stages of implementation happen and the community gauges its comfort with next steps. Some of the issues that we're not going to get over the finish line this session, you know, advocates, please know that we can have conversations about what makes sense in next steps moving into 2017 and beyond. And public health protectors and professionals, please know that we're trying really hard to not force the conversation or rush it in ways that, because we recognize we're in a new sector and people have really different levels of comfort with where we even are today, let alone where we are going in these bills. And so we're all trying to respect one another's comfort level and needs, and certainly the need to protect kids. So I hope that's the message you're taking from this, Doctor. Okay, thank you, everybody. Next panel, we have about 7 people left, so we should be able to get everyone within the rest of our time. We have next up Jeff Sugarman, Hovering LaPlante, and Chris Steps. And then on deck we have Brent McCarthy, PK, and Harrison Conley, B. Harrison Conley. Thank you. And then last of all, we have Will Feetham, just so that you know. Welcome, everyone. Please go in any order. State your name for the record before you begin.
I think I'll start off. I'd like to thank the committee for having us here today. My name is Hovering LaPlante. I'm a co-owner and chief executive officer of Elby's Edibles. I think it's appropriate that I follow up your comments, Representative Helm. Speaking for the edible community, and I feel like we haven't really had a very strong voice, and I feel like we're taking a lot of the heat in cannabis at this current time. I'm here to testify that edibles are a safe, effective method of ingestion of cannabis, that the worries about it are overblown and usually come from the unregulated marketplaces. Where there are regulated marketplaces, you really do not have issues. And what I'm concerned about is over-regulating edibles, and what that will do is create a larger black market of unsafe edibles instead of a safely regulated market for the adult and medical consumers. So to start off with that, but I am here basically in support of 1511-16. I think there's been a lot of really great work done in this short session as far as moving the legislative process forward in a positive direction. When it comes to edibles, concentrates, tinctures, we've seen in the process that edibles really have been getting left behind by the OHA. They're looking at raising all the dosaging and everything for concentrates and tinctures, saying that a cookie is more attractive than, say, another cannabis product. In our opinion, a 2 or 3 year old is going to put anything in their mouth, not necessarily a cookie. And so edibles should not be signaled down on in that respect. We don't support any dosage limits for medical. When it comes to rec, we do support 10-100 for our industry. We've been producing edibles since 2010 for the medical patients in Oregon. We're very well regarded, and we have a company that we're proud of. We're highly in support of co-location for that reason. We think that it's best serving the citizens of Oregon if you allow us to take our expertise from the medical market and transition it to the recreation market. If we're having to build a second facility, then we're going to have to choose between recreation and medical, and I don't think that serves the citizens of Oregon at all. So we're strongly in support of co-location. And finally, early start. We are in support of early start of edibles. We are ready to serve the recreation market. The one caveat being that the individually packaging each dose within the package is overreaching, in our opinion. We think that that's very wasteful. It's going to add costs to the packaging, to the process, and a lot of waste into Oregon's landfills and into our environment, which is unnecessary. As we've seen, individual dosing isn't done in any other product, be it pharmaceuticals or liquor or anything like that. So, again, we thank you for letting us testify here today and appreciate you listening to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. My name is Christopher Ships, not as you pronounce it, but thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm the owner and PRF of Lincoln City Collective out in Lincoln City. I'm also a medical patient, a grower, and a caregiver. As Michael explained earlier, we've had problems in the county with growing. I had to move my growing facility out of the county. It was very expensive. I was able to open up a dispensary, which has been unbelievable, and to sell recreational marijuana has been incredible for the reaction from the customers. Thank you very much for everything that you guys have done to put forth everything that's happening in this industry. I also like to thank you for the opportunity to be a pharmacist rather than a drug dealer. And I say that because when a pharmacist follows the rules and regulations, they're a pharmacist. The minute that they don't, they're a drug dealer. So I like the opportunity to follow rules and regulations and be a pharmacist in this market. As secondarily, I've come here to talk to you about having the two-year residency requirement. As a small business owner, I had to go get funding from other places, and I would not like to be strong-armed out of my business by people that have money and they can push me out of the business. The two-year residency is kind of a security blanket for the small business owners here in Oregon to keep their businesses. And that's it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Sugarman. I'm here today representing Groundworks Operations. We are a vertically integrated cannabis company. I'm here today to strongly support Senate Bill 1511 and the Dash 16 amendments. I have three things I want to talk about real quickly. One, I think this will actually help improve patient access by allowing medical patients to buy tax-free in any locations. I think that's particularly important in areas that will have very few shops, and simply it's the right thing to do no matter where they buy it. We also support the expanded late early sales of edibles and concentrates. I think it's very important to move that arena into the regulated system as well. I think it will help stem the black market by offering adults legal sales where they can get edibles and concentrates. But maybe most importantly, it's going to give those folks who are in those shops and selling those products the chance to educate consumers about what they're getting. And I know that the OLCC and the OHA is going to make sure that we provide information to those patients about the edibles and the concentrates that they're getting. And so I think for that reason, I'd much rather see people who want to use edibles getting it in the shops than getting it someplace else. The third thing I want to strongly support in 1511 is this day on reducing production limits. I think all of us for the last 2 years have been trying to achieve a very smooth path from the OHA to the OLCC. By doing what you're doing in Senate Bill 1511, we're going to ensure that patients don't get cut off from their growers in a very short period of time. And I think that will also ensure an adequate supply for those patients this summer and an adequate supply as we open the adult use market in the fall. I have one other issue that I'd like to talk about real quickly for the third bill. Yesterday, I was one of several people who was allowed to beta test the OHA's new system for registering producers, processors, and dispensaries. It's an online system, and it's a good system, and I think it's going to work very well for the small growers. But I've identified one particular problem that I think we need to address, and that's that the plan right now is that each individual grower is going to have to set up their own account in the OHA system and track the 24 plants that they grow and where that product is transferred. And again, for small operations, I think that's going to work very well. The problem is where you have multiple growers, 15 or 20 growers, many of them who are patients who are really lending their ability to that entity to to be able to grow for them and for other patients. So if what I think is going to happen is we're not going to get the kind of information that we need if we have each individual grower required to submit their own to file their own statements. So I think we'll get much more accurate information. Secondly, I think many of those patient growers will not sign up for this, and so the patients that are under them are going to lose the ability and lose their growers right away. I think there's a simple fix for this, and I think it could be allowing one master grower or one person responsible for that grow site to be able to file for that entire premises. We license premises in all other areas here, and while I'm not trying to break the card system up here, I think allowing one person to report for all premises is a very simple fix to this, and I apologize for taking too much time. Thank you.
Thank you for offering that idea, and you know, it sounds like something we need to have follow-up conversations about out of the desire to make sure that we get the rest of the folks in before the end. I'll hold any other thoughts on it for now, for the time being, but maybe we can talk about it more later. And of course, this is going to be iterative, but you're making a point that maybe we can find a way to address in the third bill. Yes. We'll have to talk about it. Thank you. All of you. Thank you. Now we've got Brent McCarthy. We've got four remaining people, and maybe we can bring up an extra chair if, Will, you would rather not be up here all by yourself. But we've got Brent McCarthy, PK, Harrison Connolly, and Will Feetham. Oh, and you've got your own, so you're also – okay, great. We'll bring up one more chair. Okay, so Will will come up next. Excellent. So, you know what, one of you is welcome to begin while Mr. Connolly is kind of finishing getting situated. You may speak in any order makes sense for you.
Okay. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm PK, executive producer of Mercy TV. You've seen me year after year, a lot of meetings I've been going to. Well, 15, 11, and 40, 14, good bill. It should pass.
Thank you.
Okay, that's enough. The medical patients are getting charged too much. Do you pay to get your medicine to have the right of using cannabis as your medicine? That seems a little ridiculous. And now everybody can grow at least four plants of their own. Not as quality as the medical department. So I have a fellow grower on the farm. I have several patients that the fees for the medical is just too high. I still help them out because they're still suffering in pain and they can't afford to go down to a dispensary and pay that. Let's see. I have a healing oil, St. PK's healing oil. It's out of virgin olive oil and cannabis. Every season, I'm an outside grower now. Every season, I put a good few ounces into the 5-gallon bucket. During the year, I may add more olive oil to it. I'm going to keep the mash. I put the mash in a colander, and then I have a separate jar that I'll bring with me. I have carpal tunnel that I use it on them. I've shared it with people with skin cancers and that disappear. I went up to the university. I have a cure for skin cancer. And they asked, what's in it? Olive oil, cannabis, garlic and onion powder. And they shunned me. I had the oil tested. Wow. I'm putting these choice buds in there, flowers, and it only comes up 0.50. None of the other things that they tested for came up. But then if you heat it up, it's a different story because you activated the THC molecules and others. Thank you for listening. You've done a real good job. If there's any time I can help, I will.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. McCarthy?
Hi, my name is Brent McCarthy. I'm here on behalf of patients mainly. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members, for doing this job. I know it's not an easy one and a long one, obviously. The first thing I wanted to say on behalf of the patients is that the people in OMMP are scared. Sorry. Some of us use amounts of cannabis that a lot of people don't understand. I crushed T12 and L1 in my back and haven't taken a pharmaceutical because of heroin addiction prior. Mm-hmm. And without cannabis, I wouldn't be here today. Mm-hmm. I know that. Tread softly on what you're doing, but try to do it with Godspeed, because everybody is sitting out there not knowing. That's the trouble. Nobody knows what we're going to end with, and nobody knows if we're going to have to go back to the black market. So please just, like I said, tread softly on your choices, because remember, the very first line of Measure 91 said that the OMMP would not be affected, and that's all that's happened since. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for being here. Mr. Connolly.
Thank you, Co-Chair Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee. I am indeed B. Harrison Connolly, and I'll take a moment to make the note that as long as there are only middle initial forms on computer forms, I'm going to insist even more that I'm B. Harrison Connolly.
Okay.
I'm here today, and I want to echo some of the comments that people have made. I thank you very much for your service generally and for the work you're doing on this particular issue. I know that the voters foisted this upon you, and I do hear this body working in good faith. I appreciate that, even though I'm beginning to be told that I'm dead in the water. I'm here supporting essentially the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 1511 to create an exception for social consumption in cannabis cafes similar to the exceptions enjoyed by tobacco sellers under the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act. Enrolled House Bill 2546 last session added inhaling cannabinoids, prohibited the inhalation of cannabinoids in public places and places of employment. Without the exception we're seeking today, House Bill 2546 will kill at least 5 Oregon small businesses, including the world-famous Cannabis Cafe. Today, as a matter of principle, consumption of cannabis is legal in the state of Oregon, and that's great. We just are living with 2 exceptions. Basically, you can't consume it indoors, you can't consume it outdoors. The limitations don't work for many Oregonians, including individuals living in Section 8 housing, many apartment dwellers, and for visitors to our hotels and motels, visitors to our state who are lodging in hotels and motels. The limitations don't work for my client either, who is not just a business person, but she's also a grandmother, and she does not want to see cannabis in the parks and the public settings. Since 2009, Madeline Martinez and the world-famous Cannabis Cafe have provided a safe community setting out of public view in which Oregonians with medical cards could assemble peaceably with like-minded individuals and consume legal cannabis. There are a handful of folks in this room today that we're able to advocate jointly together. Mr. McCarthy is one of those whom I've met as a result of the cannabis cafes, as a result of being able to come out of hiding in my basement and find out that there are like-minded individuals, apparently at least 56% of us. Right now, as a result of 2546 and health authority rules, we are potentially subject to $500 per day penalties at the world famous cafe, and we have been in existence since 2009. The Dash 4 amendments were drafted narrowly to allow members-only cannabis cafes as an exception to the prohibition on cannabis consumption in places of employment, because we are a members-only facility, so we are not a public place. Legislative Council is currently working on amendments to keep up with your Dash 16s and to add local control in the form of an opt-out that's very similar to the recreational licensing opt-out without the time limits. I've been asked if we are, in fact, world famous, and so we have a map here that just wanted to show you that, in fact, like we hope our support is on this committee, from the far east, far left, we have Hawaii represented. Far right, we have Australia, New Zealand, Japan, five continents, basically. Representatives from Africa, Saudi Arabia, Dubai have all been to the cafe. Europe is pretty well represented, and you've all seen maps of this or had opportunities to see maps of this. I'd like to mention just, you know, as with any other small business, this model won't succeed in communities where there is not a body of support for it. But we really think that it is entirely appropriate that we're tired of hiding in our basements. We'd like the opportunity to come together. We'd like to understand the political power we have. We certainly need services for folks like this, and we have been provider of that kind of service, giving them a place to consume. I will stop with it. Well, I'd like to mention, if I could, right quickly, there is unsigned testimony on OHA letterhead raising some issues with the Dash 4. A number of those things, I'm going to try to catch Mark Mayer and fix a couple of those things in the next draft that we're getting. But there are a number of other things. I spent a lot of years in reviewing administrative rules for compliance with Constitution and enabling statutes. The health authority has rulemaking authority for this series, and while we may not be happy with it in the end, I think most of the issues they raise fall within their ability to make rules.
Thank you very much, and I know this is a complicated subject, and I appreciate you're trying to get it as close to 3 minutes as you can. I would say that, you know, as to cannabis cafes this session, it's hard for me to see us having the votes to get authorization for cannabis cafes through both chambers of the legislature this session. But, you know, I, for one, am interested in working on trying to get something that we can pass through both chambers, potentially in 2017. And I think it's going to involve us working with some of the folks who have testified expressing their concern, as well as advocates, to see if there's a balance we can strike that the community can accept. And I think part of it's going to hinge on people seeing how the next few months in years, you know, roll out and getting more comfortable with the idea that we could have legal consumption by adults.
In that regard, if I could, we have five businesses that will not survive till 2017, including my client, who is building the Oregon brand.
Right.
So I would ask you to consider grandmothering the five business entities this session. I have talked with some of the members of the healthcare committee, and I'm not clear that we don't have some support for grandmothering those existing businesses.
Well, good. Well, thank you for that. And again, while the 1511 is in the shape probably that it's going to be in when we bring it to call the question on whether we can get committee support for it, the third bill does remain for people to have conversations. But I think this is a hard one. You know, the public health community has started to express quite a lot of concern. But let's have conversations about next steps, and I sure appreciate your thinking and your talking about it. Thank you, gentlemen. We have Will Feetham, and then we have an opportunity for committee members to express some additional thoughts. Did you have a comment for the Cannabis Cafe people?
I did not.
Okay, great. So welcome, and please state your name for the record and share your thoughts, and then the committee will have an opportunity to have some comments among ourselves, too. Welcome.
My name is Will Feetham. I live in Jackson County, and I am part of the Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak before you again. I would like to say thank you very much for all of the relentless work you're doing on making this new system work. And I am very hopeful about the future. I represent small farmers and medical patients, and I see a potential path, especially given some of the protections in the Christmas tree bill, that will allow us to continue doing the work that that motivates us. So there's a couple things I would like to bring your attention to, and mostly they are questions. One is that based on the language in 1511, it seems to me like growers who are growing for more than two patients at a grow site will be getting a license with the OLCC in order to enable them to collect or to get reimbursement at dispensaries. We have yet to hear from the OLCC what regulations they will place as a part of getting that registration, which could have an impact on how viable that is. We are extremely hopeful about the small canopy concept, the idea of being able to serve our patients and grow on our small farms and also serve the recreational market seems like a path that can last for the indefinite future rather than a temporary fix to ensure that no one's hurt now. So we're very hopeful about that. In regards to making that work, I like the language that is I saw regarding setbacks for agricultural buildings. And it was somewhat unclear to me. In conversations with people in Jackson County who are making their local ordinances, the distinction between agricultural use and farm use has been an important part of their reasoning to get 250-foot setbacks. And I am not a land use lawyer, but I just want to bring your attention to that distinction to make sure that your intention to allow existing businesses and farms to exist on rural residential is actually honored at the local level. So I don't have any language to suggest just that the very close attention to the technicality will allow your intention to be fulfilled in reality. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak again.
Thank you. Thanks for coming up. Committee members, well, thank you to the people who've come up and for the people who've driven a long way. In particular, thanks a lot for being here and for your ongoing input and your kind manner of delivering, you know, concerns that are heartfelt and important. So we really appreciate that. Committee members, do you have any reflections or comments that you'd like to make today as we anticipate going into a work session on Tuesday about House Bill 1511 and a public hearing on Senate Bill 1598, I guess it was Senate Bill 1511, and a public hearing on Senate Bill 1598. But any thoughts that you'd like to share today as we get ready for that?
Madam Chair, I just want to thank a lot of the people in the audience who helped us get to this point, where especially on the Dash 16s for Senate Bill 1511. It's 1511. It is, you know, it's a major policy change. I think a very positive one, and I think it wouldn't have been possible without the collaboration. And I wanted to especially thank Mr. Bovet, who seems to have disappeared, but for his work on 1598, which will be a great addition to this effort.
Yeah.
And then let's go home.
Yeah, it's late. It's Friday night. Gosh. All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1511, and thank you all for coming, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for coming, and the meeting is adjourned.